Welcome to The Signal. I'm Noor Hafid.
And I'm Ben Harris. We're with the Audio Workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
You can also check out our podcast, We're The Signal, a Halifax podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud.
Today, we learn that the Children's Aisle in Chapters is actually for everyone.
And dance classes aren't just for beginner ballerinas. They're for adults, too.
We'll turn to some beginners, though. Amy Fisk tells us about first-time homebuyers.
There's not as much availability to fly because baby boomers are not moving out of their home.
And Warren De Silva reminds us that Black Friday isn't just about great deals. Some businesses are struggling to compete.
It's almost like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If you don't do it, anything, no one comes here.
We'll hear from a small business owner who is feeling the price pressure.
But first, we turn to the strike at Pete's Fruitique. The employees have been rallying support in the community. And they're not the only ones who are frustrated about low wages. Meg Campbell explains.
Their delays will not divide.
Their delays will not divide.
Workers standing side by side.
Workers standing side by side.
Employees from Pete's Fruitique are picketing outside the store on Dresden Row. A few dozen passers-by watch on as the workers make impassioned speeches against the working conditions and low wages that prompted the strike. Terry Armour works in the produce department at Pete's.
A year and a half after we voted to organize, we still have not received anything remotely resembling a fair offer from Sobeys. At our last round of negotiations, the best deal that they offered us to date was to give everyone who are currently making minimum wage a raise that for most people would have been 5 cents an hour.
That's less than $10 a month. Pete's Fruitique is owned by Sobeys, which has now closed the store indefinitely. This is just one example of a growing labor movement in Halifax. At Sunday's rally, union leaders from Java Blend and Alexander Keith's Brewery turned up to show their solidarity with Pete's unionized employees. They spoke about their own frustrations with low wages in the middle of rising costs for housing and food. Suzanne McNeil is with the nonprofit group Justice for Workers Nova Scotia. She says the strike exemplifies the growing unrest over working conditions for service workers.
Governments and employers do not give more benefits and more good wages to workers out of the goodness of their hearts. Workers have to organize and demand them.
Duncan Robertson speaks for the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. He says labor shortages have forced some business owners to raise wages.
So there, a lot of them are already above minimum wage. Government can definitely play a role too. Around 8 in 10 of our members believe that government should reform the personal income tax system to ensure that more workers can keep more of their paycheck in their pocket.
But waiting for government reforms may not be enough. Danny Kavanaugh is the president of the Nova Scotia Federation of Labor.
On strike, shut them down. Halifax is a union town.
Well, I think really at the end of the day, the unions are the only viable way for workers to have a collective voice in the workplace.
Sobeys did not respond to a request for comment. The unionized employees at Pete's Fruitique continue to picket at the Dresden Row location. Pete's Fruitique in Bedford remains open. For The Signal, I'm Meg Campbell in Halifax.
Some electric vehicle owners are frustrated. Joan Baxter has had an EV for 2 years, and for the first time, she's starting to regret that. Andy Mullins tells us why.
There are 58 Petro-Canada fast charging sites across the country. Two of them are in Nova Scotia, and at least one of them is out of service. Petro-Can says it's working on the situation, but it's causing grief for Joan Baxter. She says the site in Stewiacke was out of service for days. An app that maps out charging stations sent her to another one that wasn't working. Eventually, she found one in Halifax.
And it's a level 2 charging station. Well, those take 8 hours. So that wasn't very useful for me.
Once Baxter did find a level 3 charging station, the fastest charging option for her car, she and others had to wait in line.
So it's just been really, really frustrating. And for the first time this weekend, I really regretted having an EV.
Kurt Sampson is the executive director of the Electric Vehicle Association of Atlantic Canada. He agrees the shortage of charging stations in Nova Scotia is creating a situation where owning an electric vehicle can be impractical. But he says it's mainly an issue for people who travel longer distances, not as much for people just driving in the city and recharging at home overnight.
You know, an EV would work for your life like 364 days of the year. It would be fine. But there's this one day where you got to do this long trip, but you could go use a rental car that day and it would probably make more sense. But a lot of people just don't think like that. You want it to be able to do everything that you can imagine you might want to do.
But fast charging stations that work are essential for people like Baxter, who live in rural areas, especially when winter rolls around and her EV battery loses range in cold temperatures.
I have to really think carefully and plan in advance to make sure that there are charging stations available that will get me there and back. Otherwise, you find yourself stranded somewhere.
Kevin Bootlier is the manager of community energy with the Halifax Municipality. He says private companies aren't investing enough.
I'd say there definitely is hesitancy because there's not enough electric vehicles in the market today. It's a chicken and egg scenario. It's going to take somebody like the municipality to invest in this infrastructure and essentially lose money on it to hopefully encourage the adoption of electric vehicles.
He says the city will install 8 new fast charging sites in the next year, including in rural locations such as Hubbard's and Sheet Harbor. Meanwhile, Joan Baxter wants to see government and industry work together to build the infrastructure for vehicles that do less damage to the planet. For The Signal, I'm Andy Mullins in Halifax.
When I think about sustainability, electric cars and solar panels usually come to mind. But I hadn't thought of the environmental impacts of a funeral until this week. I went down to the Oxford Tap Room yesterday. A new company called Epilogue Nova Scotia hosted an information session. The idea? Reducing the carbon footprint of your grave.
So in go the pegs.
Yeah.
This is kind of like IKEA.
A little bit.
IKEA doesn't sell these though.
No.
Not yet.
Craftsman Jeremy Brunel isn't assembling a prefab bookshelf. He's putting together a do-it-yourself, environmentally friendly casket. Louisa Horn is looking on.
All these little pegs, and we know these little pegs are going to hold me. I'm striking. They look little. I'm not little. All right, we'll see.
Horn is the founder of a new Halifax company that promotes these DIY coffins and a whole range of end-of-life services and natural burial products. The company is called Epilogue. It held its corporate launch this week at a pub on Quinpool Road, with cookies and a blues performer providing the background sound. Horn talked about the company's goal, making the end-of-life process as environmentally sustainable as possible.
And this is why I talk about many shades of green, right? There's, you can be as green as you can in one way, but then parts of it, maybe not as green.
But the caskets, they're green. They break down quickly, they don't have nails, and they're made of locally sourced wood. Brunel makes them in his workshop in New Brunswick, selling them online as a kit people can build themselves at home for much less than the price of a regular coffin.
Look at that, comes with a hammer.
That's right, so the mallet is included, and then you also have a box of wooden pegs that we're not gonna use.
Lou Lamello was among a few dozen people who turned up for the launch.
I never really thought about the environment when it came to my funeral, but I like the idea of a homemade casket.
The idea of going green for a funeral might seem strange to some, but at a time when more than 20% of the people in the region are over 65, Horn and Brunel say it's an industry primed to take off.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU, 88.1 FM. In Halifax. You can also hear us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast.
We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Ben Harris.
And I'm Noor Hafid. Coming up on the show, 16,000 people are struggling with dementia in Nova Scotia.
You're sort of forced to take away their independence, which is hard because at that point she didn't understand.
The number of patients is growing. The quality of care remains a concern.
Later, we'll also hear about concerts by candlelight.
After all these years of playing classical music, I have never seen audiences this big.
Chloe Hannon will take us to one of those concerts.
Listening to classical music is one way to unwind. But it's not the only way. For some, it's opening a book.
You may remember the story of the Little Prince from your childhood. This year, the book turned 80. To celebrate, Alliance Française is organizing children's workshops. I attended one of them. I learned that The Little Prince may be worth a spot on your bookshelf, whether you're 5 or 50. It's raining in Halifax. A cold day.
You're a sweet allergic old shark.
But at Alliance Française, in Halifax's Hydrostone neighborhood, laughter warms up the little room where a special workshop is happening. 80 years have passed since the Little Prince landed on Earth from his tiny planet. And to celebrate that, Alliance Française is organizing philosophical workshops in French for children aged 6 to 12.
We're never too young to talk about everything. Even if you're 6 years old, you have your opinion.
That's Tiffany Melly. She runs the workshop. Each week, she focuses on one of the themes of the book. Today, she chose happiness. Melly guides the children through questions. Some simple, like what makes them happy. And some more intricate, like can we be happy on our own? Jeremy Niekamp has been bringing his son Timothy to every Little Prince workshop.
I think it's important for children to learn how to think about issues from different perspectives. I think that that's a good exercise of the mind.
Niekamp thinks the book is not limited to young audiences.
There's a universality to the ideas that are presented because, you know, the child's mind, it will grow into an adult's mind.
He's not the only one to feel this way.
The child within each of us is actually the important audience.
Stephen Gerrard wrote his master's thesis on The Little Prince. He thinks the quietness in the book offers adult readers a nice pause from their busy lives and can remind them of the need to reconnect with their inner child.
The stillness of the book itself, the minimalism of the phrases, the silences between the words are a direct answer to that desire within us.
Gerrard says one of the book's most important takeaways is the advice to look beyond meaningless details if we want to form meaningful relationships.
We must not hang ourselves up on details and be separated from others when the intention behind the detail is what counts much, much, much more.
He thinks the book shows readers how true understanding comes from empathy. And as people who've seen the movie based on the book will remember, it's not just what we see with our eyes.
It's only with the heart that one can see clearly. What's essential is invisible to the eye.
A thought worth reflecting on, regardless of age. And Ben, the next Little Prince Children's Workshop is happening this Saturday at 1 p.m. It will focus on photography with visual artist Léon Dubois.
Thanks, Noor. The number of dementia patients in Canada is expected to triple in the next 25 years. But some people say the healthcare system isn't ready. Casey Jordan talked to a local family. They're worried about the state of care for current and future patients.
Her ability to prepare a meal declined quite some time ago. She would start dinner at 9 in the morning.
Kim Hiltz's mother was diagnosed with dementia in 2016. Leigh Labarto lives with the disease on a farm in the Annapolis Valley with her husband. She's always enjoyed cooking and making preserves, but she can't do those things anymore. Hiltz had to install a safety switch behind the stove. She also told her she could no longer drive and hid her keys.
She's lost her independence completely, and it's hard.
Their story isn't unique. The population is aging. More people will be diagnosed. And some are concerned the healthcare system isn't ready. Dr. Shanna Treneman is with Dalhousie's College of Pharmacy.
We're kind of standing still, I think, with respect to how well we are doing with our ability to care for older adults with dementia. So while we are making improvements, unfortunately, the disease is becoming more prevalent and we're just not fast enough.
Many people with dementia are cared for at home. Some prefer that to living with family or in a long-term care facility. Hiltz hires the VON to check on her mother 6 times a week. But she says there isn't enough consistency. They rarely see the same nurse twice. Dr. Melissa Andrew studies the social vulnerability of dementia patients. She's heard this complaint before.
They do have this revolving door, and that can be very disorienting to somebody living with dementia.
Hiltz also says she wants to see more personalized care. Andrew agrees with her.
It really, you know, needs to be tailored to the individual situation. Like, really the key would be then building trust and consistency in that care.
Families are also providing care to their loved ones. But Treneman says not every family can make it work.
It's very hard to provide care when you're also trying to work at your own job.
Meanwhile, Hiltz is her mother's part-time caregiver. She's trying to help her enjoy the small pleasures in life. She's not allowed to cook anymore, but Bartow still enjoys the occasional road trip. Hiltz drives her to East Dalhousie, the community where she grew up. Hiltz knows her mother enjoys it.
She was close to her mother and she was an only child, so whenever you take her to that little community, it perks her up.
For The Signal, I'm Casey Jordan in Halifax.
As people age, it becomes more important to take care of themselves. But that doesn't have to be boring. A group of adults in Halifax is attending dance classes. They move their bodies and they exercise their minds. Sarah Drysdale dropped into a class.
Let's get started. Ready?
In Apollo Reagan Hall in the Halifax Central Library, a group of nearly 30 older adults gather to dance together. A projector screen is rolled down, and a pre-recorded class begins to play. In the video, two dancers from Canada's National Ballet School demonstrate the moves. One is standing, and the other sits to show adaptations for people with less mobility. Shelby Kennedy is with the library. She says the library's partnership with the National Ballet has been very successful.
We immediately went to it because, A, we love the National Ballet School. They're a wonderful partner for the library. B, since it's a recording, it doesn't cost too much staff resources.
She says it's mostly older people who turn up. Laura McDonald is a regular attendee of the program. She says she's glad she joined.
I came to dance a little bit later in my life. I mean, I was in my 20s. But I remember thinking, oh, all these folks have been dancing since they were 4. You know, is it too late for me? And of course it wasn't too late.
Dancing with other people is something she really missed during COVID. But now, she says, classes like these are a great reminder about the benefits of community.
I like them all, but I guess the instructors are just like super sweet and giving us sort of a story that goes with the movement that's really inspiring, I find.
And there's more than just physical benefits, says Sarah Coffin. She's with Motion Dance. It runs several programs at the library. She says dance is holistic, something that engages the brain, body, and emotions.
So this day we want to use the tools of creativity and mindfulness, mind-body connection, and community to share ways that we can build something together. And in this case, it's going to be movements for potentially a dance.
Moving your body is great. But for these women, finding an art form that allows them to creatively express themselves is even better. For The Signal, I'm Sarah Drysdale in Halifax.
Before our final few stories, how about a tune?
I can never refuse a tune. But can we hear from Jen Grant? I hear she's going to be performing this weekend.
Yes, she is. She'll be at the Dalhousie's Art Center this Saturday evening. But here's a taste for those of you who can't make it.
You dreamer, you dreamer.
Now that's someone I would not want to miss.
Attending live performances is a great way to get out of the house, but sometimes all we want is the comfort of being right at home.
Still, buying a home isn't easy for many millennials. Apparently, it boils down to more than just price. New data shows that adult children of homeowners are twice as likely to be homeowners themselves. Amy Fisk explains.
A new report says people whose parents own their own home are twice as likely to be destined for homeownership. Katie Whitlock is a millennial who won't be waiting on her parents to inherit their home.
I don't think I'm going to be taking over Bill and Belma's house just because I think retirement's going to be a lot more expensive than they even realize it is.
New data from Statistics Canada shows if you're not in line to inherit property, you might be out of luck.
I find it like it's so hard for everyone and everyone's like not doing great.
Matthew Hansberger is the president of real estate company Royal LePage. He says the housing market can be daunting for those who have only rented.
If it's not something you've been exposed to in your youth, you have to make a greater effort to go out and learn it.
Plus, parents with houses tend to have more money to share.
I think that people will be doing so by either gifting a down payment or maybe just in fact having the kid take over the house that they potentially grew up in.
And Hansberger says even people who do have cash are having a hard time finding a house to buy.
What they're finding is that there's not as much availability of supply because baby boomers are not moving out of their homes.
Clinton Wilkins is the principal mortgage broker for Centum Home Lenders. He understands what the new data is saying, that home ownership is easier for those with parents who own property and can share the equity.
Those are the people that, you know, have built up the credit, have the income, and hopefully have the asset, whether that's savings or help from the family to be able to get into that housing market.
That means learning about first-time home buyers' incentives or using money from your savings for a down payment. Wilkins has some advice for those gearing up to settle down.
It really starts with a pre-approval. Seek the advice of an unbiased mortgage professional. And I think making a plan is so important.
Still, for Katie Whitlock, a way into the housing market seems impossible.
But then you try to get your own mortgage, like only level 80,000, 90,000 down deposit. And you're like, no, bitch, because I'm putting all my money into this guy's mortgage. And the mortgage that I get approved for would be way less than the rent I'm paying.
That's the reality for a lot of millennials who see the housing market as completely out of reach. Amy Fisk for The Signal, Halifax.
If buying a home is too big a purchase, tomorrow's Black Friday sales might be more affordable. It's heaven for the shopaholics around the world. But as Warren De Silva tells us, it isn't so sweet for some local businesses.
Black Friday deals are plastered on storefronts along Spring Garden Road. Joanna Gallipo owns Sweet Bee, a clothing store in the area. She's getting ready for holiday sales too. But Black Friday is not good news for her.
I think the traffic just all goes towards the malls with the big box stores and like downtown, it just totally removes all of our traffic.
She says she can't reduce prices the way big box and chain stores do.
So it's frustrating to me because I just put new stuff out and people are really expecting some sort of deal. It's almost like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If you don't do it, anything, no one comes here.
Black Friday is a trend that started in America. But over the last few years, it has started catching up in Canada, says Muhammad Il-Huzur. He teaches marketing at Dalhousie University.
Black Friday is a marketing practice that has been there over the last 10 years. Hope is the sales that that brands have, that retailers have, will encourage people to come and purchase products.
He says it works. Consumers buy more and more, but it's not a level playing ground for all retailers. Roots Canada is offering up to 60% off. Laura Stanley is a sales and marketing associate there.
For something like Black Friday, where we are offering 30% off, we will only start to lose money on sales when it gets to like 50% off mark.
Even she says small locally run businesses cannot compete with these slashed down prices.
They might not have the same kind of resources that a business like Roots or let's say Lululemon just down the road, which is probably bigger than Roots is. So they have an advantage over local owned businesses.
Tomorrow is officially Black Friday. Many have got their shopping lists ready, but small businesses say it means a list of losses. Back at Sweet Pea, Gallipo is putting out her latest stock and hopes people will look beyond Black Friday deals.
It's not about not partaking in it, but maybe if you could just balance it out. And for every time you shop big box, maybe try to think of a small business and shop there too.
Thanks so much for visiting and shopping local.
For The Signal, I'm Warren De Silva in Halifax.
Black Friday. Time to go to the mall. Black Friday. I'm gonna purchase it all. Black Friday.
If you find yourself in unbearably crowded stores this weekend, you might need to decompress. Thankfully, evenings of candlelight and classical music have found a space at the Spatz Theatre. And as Chloe Hannon tells us, it's an opportunity for local musicians to share their talent.
As long as I can remember, I loved music. It's just a great passion of mine, and I was really lucky to live in a place where music is available to so many young people.
Catherine Little, a local musician, is performing in the Candlelight Concerts. She says she couldn't pass up this opportunity for her music career.
I think having that opportunity to also reach people who wouldn't normally come and hear chamber music or classical music is a big deal for me too.
Little plays her cello surrounded by thousands of candles and fellow musicians and a string quartet.
There's something about the candles. It's a really, you know, it's a fairly simple idea in one sense, but there are so many of them. Like, there are thousands around the audience and on the stage. It kind of gives just like a visual lift to what we're doing.
These candlelight concerts have been making their way across Europe and North America.
After all these years of playing classical music, I have never seen audiences this big.
Riley Forbes attended the Halloween theme concert in October.
I thought it was a really cool experience. It's very immersive. They do a lot of like audience interaction, which I wasn't expecting. And it's, you know, just a quartet of string musicians, and they're really talented, and it was really atmospheric. So it was really cool.
Andrew Bryan manages the Candlelight Concert Project for North America. He says the concerts are filled with wow factors that make it a unique experience for the audience.
So the first thing they get to experience is that wow moment when they walk into the venue. We have 3,000 candles at the Spatz Theater. And then they just get to experience a one-hour concert featuring, you know, a very well-known classical composer or pop band.
In every city, the show hires local musicians, giving them the opportunity to share their musical talents with their community.
We love to partner with local musicians, no matter how established they are.
For musicians like Catherine Little, it's exposure for her artistic abilities and a chance for her to share a love of classical music in a magical setting. For The Signal, I'm Chloe Hannon in Halifax.
If you're interested, the candlelit holiday-themed shows begin at the Spatz Theatre on December 5th.
That's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Instagram. Our handle is SignalHFX.
And we post our entire show on our website at signalhfx.ca.
Our show was produced this week by Reysa Alibi, with associate producer Andy Mullins.
A shout out to Mark Pinio, our studio technician.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Noor Hafid.
And I'm Ben Harris. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with more stories.